from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University. Online at wvu.edu.
At the legislature today, delegates delay action on a controversial medical marijuana bill, which House leaders are promising they will take up next week. Senators begin to take up House bills to increase penalties for drug crimes, and the governor is once again pushing his plan to increase taxes by $45 million, this time at a lobbying day aimed to prevent major budget cuts. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. A bill to legalize medical marijuana in the state is bypassing the committee process, putting it on the fast track for a vote in the House. Senate Bill 386 was read for a first time on the floor last night after a 54-40 procedural vote to bring it straight to the floor. Liz McCormick joins us with more.
The vote last night has been called historic in the chamber, but several delegates argued pulling the bill out of the committee process was the only way members would get to put the medical marijuana bill to a vote this session.
Senate Bill 386 would create the West Virginia Medical Cannabis Act, legalizing medical marijuana in the state. It passed out of the Senate Wednesday on a 28-6 vote after being worked through the chamber's Health and Judiciary Committees. The bill, titled the West Virginia Medical Cannabis Act, would create a 17-member commission in the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources. That commission would oversee the program, creating rules for doctors, patients, growers, and dispensers that would then be approved by the legislature. Certain illnesses like post-traumatic stress disorder, chronic pain, or seizures could constitute a doctor prescribing marijuana under the bill. Patients with a prescription would also be able to grow up to 2 plants for personal use. The medical cannabis program, however, wouldn't begin until July 2018. The bill was on second reading in the chamber Friday after the procedural vote Thursday night to bypass the committee process. Majority Leader Darrell Coles of Morgan County says the bill was supposed to go to the House Health and Judiciary Committees before being brought to the floor. He opposed the motion last night to dispense with the committee references.
Well, I thought it was fair and reasonable to send it to those committees. The issue of medical marijuana, while it enjoys some support, the bill is poorly written. It has some technical flaws. It has some legal issues. And that bill needs to be worked in the Health Committee and in the Judiciary Committee to work some of those things out. So I was certainly in support of sending it to committee before it was ever to be considered by the House.
Republican Delegate Mike Folk of Berkeley County made the motion to pull the bill Thursday. Folk says the move was important because
I believe that was the only way this bill would ever make it to the floor. And so it was important just to, and it already passed 2 committees in the Senate.
Several lawmakers, both Republicans and Democrats, gave floor speeches last night criticizing House leadership for not prioritizing a medical marijuana bill in the chamber.
The vote that happened last night sent a very serious message that the people of West Virginia want this. The representatives have been told that, and we've talked this to death for years. 29 other states already have it. It's the compassionate thing to do for those people that have illnesses.
Republican Charlotte Lane of Kanawha County was one of those delegates who'd introduced a medical marijuana bill this session in the House. Her bill was never placed on an agenda, but she wants to see a program in the state.
Some of us in the House have introduced medical marijuana bills, but we realized the House wasn't really going to take up our bills. So when the Senate sent over a bill that was a good bill, then we took that opportunity to just say, let's dispense with the committee reference, let's just leave it on the floor, and that way we can vote for it. And we saw that as the only opportunity that we were going to get this session to vote on medical marijuana.
At the start of today's floor session, however, House Judiciary Chair John Schott of Mercer County asked to address the members of the chamber.
Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday the majority of the members here clearly expressed their desire to take up a bill on medical marijuana. I was not part of that majority, but I accept and respect the decision of the majority. The first two terms I was down here, I was a member of the minority, and I suppose, at least as to this issue, I'm now returned to that status. My philosophy has always been, even if you don't agree with something that we take up down here, we ought to try to make it the best it can possibly be.
Schott says he studied the Senate bill Thursday night and does have some concerns with it. He's worried about the amount of power the commission would actually have over everything from prescriptions to packaging. He asked the members to allow him to make a motion to delay consideration of the bill until Monday.
My commitment to you is if you will give my staff and my counsel, chief counsel's agreed to give up his Sunday, I'm willing to stay here Sunday and work on this and present something to you on second reading on Monday for you to vote on and give you those choices.
Republican Pat McGeehan of Hancock County, a member of the Liberty Caucus who joined Democrats in moving the bill to the floor, questioned Schott.
Sir, I respect your position and I do not intend to object. If you would give us your word that some of the members from the prevailing side of the motion that carried last night have at least some sort of access or involved in the amendment process.
Anyone who wants to stay over Sunday and work with us on this is welcome to participate.
So we'll have access to some of the drafting from your staff that occurs over the weekend. Is that correct?
To the gentleman, we will make this as open as we can.
Minority Leader Tim Miley of Harrison County spoke in favor of Schott's request. He told the body he spoke with Schott and Speaker Tim Armstead this morning.
I want everyone to know that despite at times there being an unhealthy dose of paranoia and fear and skepticism in this body, I do think everyone's prepared to work forward on this issue in a bipartisan manner to get a great product, whether you are ultimately for or against the bill.
The bill was postponed until Monday, when members will be able to offer amendments to the Medicinal Cannabis Act. No objections were made to the motion.
If House leadership does not delay the medical marijuana bill again, Senate Bill 386 would be up for a final vote in the chamber on Tuesday. If the bill is amended by the House, it would have to return to the Senate for its approval before being sent to the governor for a signature. Governor Jim Justice has said he could support medical marijuana in the state.
Senators are considering amendments to a bill that would make it illegal to manufacture and distribute fentanyl in West Virginia, adding it to the state's list of Schedule I drugs. One senator, however, thinks the bill may prohibit doctors from prescribing the drug for terminally ill patients, which caused some delay to consideration today.
House Bill 2329 would make it illegal to produce, distribute, transport, or use fentanyl in the state. The bill passed out of the House at the beginning of March on a 95-3 vote. Fentanyl is a narcotic used to treat severe pain, but has also been responsible for many drug overdose deaths in the state. In August, 26 overdoses were reported in just a few hours after a batch of heroin laced with fentanyl was sold in Huntington. The drug is so strong, it can take several doses of the overdose-reversing medication naloxone to revive a patient. Senator Mike Woeful represents the area and supports the bill, which sets up felony penalties of 2 to 20 years in prison and a fine of up to $10,000.
So this is a great tool for our prosecutors, for our law enforcement officials to combat the crisis that our state is experiencing, and I encourage passage.
In addition to the penalties, the bill makes fentanyl a Schedule I drug, which means it is illegal to prescribe or distribute because it has no medicinal value. Schedule I drugs include things like heroin and cocaine. The bill was on second reading in the Senate today, or the amendment phase, and Senator Ron Stallings questioned whether that provision would cause problems for doctors like himself.
We prescribe Duragesic, which is a fentanyl patch, for patients with legitimate pain and frequently with terminal pain, and it's a Schedule II drug right now. And if we change it to a Schedule I drug, we're not going to be able to prescribe that anymore. And I think... we're doing something here that we don't intend to do.
Stallings says he agrees that any injectable form of the drug should be illegal, but the time-to-release patches he often prescribes to cancer patients to treat pain should not. Senate Judiciary Chair Charles Trump agreed and moved to advance the bill to its third reading tomorrow with the ability to offer more amendments.
You know, I've learned that Senator from Boone raises a pharmacological question or a medical question. We need to pay attention, make sure we're doing the right thing. So I move that the bill be advanced to third with right to amend.
Senators will take up the bill during a 9 a.m. floor session tomorrow, potentially amending it and putting it to a final vote.
The ability to revoke or suspend a driver's license would be taken away from the Division of Motor Vehicles and given to magistrate courts under a Senate bill being considered in the House. Senate Bill 212 removes administrative hearings from the DMV and places them in the purview of county magistrates. Law enforcement is against the measure. Magistrates and defense attorneys support the bill that was the subject of a public hearing in the House chamber this morning. Here is some of the testimony.
My experience in the prosecuting attorney's office here in Kanawha County demonstrates that there has been an increase over the years, a gradual increase in the number of impaired drivers on drugs. The only method that we have to test those people is blood. Those blood samples are sent to the state police laboratory, where they sit for long periods of time because of the backlog. The cases come up for trial in magistrate court, and frequently, because we don't have the blood evidence, they're dismissed. So the switch from the administrative process, which has a lower standard of proof, to the beyond a reasonable doubt standard in magistrate court on criminal cases is going to result in a significant increase in the percentage of people charged with driving under the influence, particularly with drugs, will be acquitted and their license will remain. They'll be out on the road and we'll see a significant increase in impaired drivers driving the roads of the state of West Virginia.
As a magistrate, I believe that we absolutely have the ability to take care of these DUIs as we always have. I do understand his concern about the blood testing, and I would think that that would be something that we would have to work out with respect to the time in which those test results are back, but I do not see that that would be a problem with respect to the criminal charges as well.
The pressure to plead down criminal charges involving impaired drivers will accelerate if this bill passes. Without an effective administrative system, the burden on law enforcement and prosecutors and the courts will intensify.
It's been reported that Senate Bill 212 would allow drunk drivers to keep their license. That's incorrect. It allows magistrates and officers to take their license before they even sober up in many occasions. Where right now in my county, there's a gentleman who killed four people on the turnpike who's driving legally today, 4 years later, because he's in the DMV process. He's in that, and that's what covers his license.
The latest MAD publication showed that in 8 years, the last 8 years, West Virginia has reduced their DUI death rate in half. Half. And they went on to say that West Virginia should be looked at and modeled, other states should model their process after West Virginia. One time that you've ever heard West Virginia at the front, and we're going to change that situation.
Our criminal justice system gets it right. Our criminal justice system allows the law to be argued, allows the law to be applied. We don't have the same courtesy in the administrative hearing process anymore. The system that's in place is going to afford people the rights that they have under the Constitution of this state and the United States. It's also going to ensure that magistrates and prosecutors who are politically accountable to their voters hold people accountable for their actions on the roads.
Senate Bill 212 will be taken up Monday in the House Judiciary Committee. We go to the Eastern Panhandle now, where we meet three more members of the 83rd West Virginia Legislature in this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Patricia Rucker was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 2016. A Republican, she's from Jefferson County and represents the 16th Senatorial District. Rucker serves as the vice chair of the Committee on Agriculture and Rural Development. A naturalized citizen, Senator Rucker was born in Venezuela. This is her first time holding public office. Gary Howell was elected to the House of Delegates in 2010. A Republican, he's from Mineral County. Delegate Howell represents the state's 56th district. He serves as the chairman of the House Government Organization Committee. Ruth Rowan represents the state's 57th House of Delegates district from Hampshire County. A Republican, she was elected to the House of Delegates in 2004. Delegate Rowan serves as the chair of the House Committee on Senior Citizen Issues.
Today was Protect West Virginia's lobbying day at the Capitol, a group of advocates fighting to prevent major cuts to the state's budget. Governor Jim Justice joined the group this morning to push for what he says is an urgent need to increase revenue. Samantha Godby reports.
The governor's conference room was packed with kids and community members as Governor Jim Justice joined lobbying groups for Protect West Virginia Day at the Capitol. While waiting, local kids from Cabell County Schools buzzed through the room, sharing with the adults the things they love about their schools.
If the grown-ups can find a young person find a grown-up, introduce yourself, and tell them one thing that you love about your school.
That was Stephen Smith, the director of the West Virginia Healthy Kids and Families Coalition. He says the kids came to speak up about proposed budget cuts to public education. A Senate bill being considered by the House would reduce state funding to public schools by $79 million and increase local property taxes to make up for the reduction. Smith says the state schools just can't take that. Protect West Virginia and the West Virginia Healthy Kids and Families Coalition are two lobbying groups working to prevent substantial cuts to the state budget that they say will hurt West Virginians. Governor Jim Justice has been negotiating with lawmakers to increase taxes instead of going through with the proposed cuts.
For every $4, I'm going to ask you to put one penny in this glass.
Justice used that example to explain his proposed quarter of a penny sales tax increase. He says for every $4 a person spends in the state, they should pay an extra penny in sales tax. That would raise an additional $45 million in revenue that Justice says could balance the budget. Alternatively, Justice recommends increasing cigarette taxes by 15 cents as well as increasing a tax on sugary drinks by 2 cents to generate the same amount of revenue. Dr. Vinod Mariala, the president of the West Virginia Academy of Pediatric Dentistry, says sugary drink taxes have been proven to encourage healthier decisions and that it is the duty of society to look out for the health of kids.
Children go on to develop diabetes and fatty liver disease starting at age as young as 6, and they are diagnosed at age 11. I see kids every day in my practice who are 5 and 6, who probably weigh a lot more than me. And to behaviorally challenge them, it is difficult for me. They can hold me down, and I cannot hold them down.
Budget negotiations between Justice and House Republican leaders broke down earlier this week over the proposed tax increases. However, Justice says that the only alternative is devastating cuts. Standing up against potential cuts to the state's public education is what brought most of these people together today. And Smith says the fight isn't done yet.
Number one, this is not the law yet. You got that? Kids, can we say this out loud? 1, 2, 3.
This is not the law yet.
You got it. That's important because we can still fight it, right? Second thing, it could get even worse. Can we say that?
It could not even worse.
You got it.
As the legislative session comes quickly to a close, finding a means to meet these budget gaps is at the top of nearly everyone's agenda. Whether it will be through tax increases or budget cuts is yet to be seen. For the legislature today, I'm Samantha Godby at the State House.
There are a great number of people who work at the State House every day to make sure the legislative process runs smoothly behind the scenes. At least a number of those people work for Aaron Allred, the legislative manager, who shows us one of the most important functions of his work, bill drafting.
I'm Aaron Allred. I'm the legislative manager for the West Virginia Legislature. The simplest explanation is I'm over the joint staff. If you work for both the House and the Senate,
then you come under my supervision. And what we do is all the back office stuff. You know, we print the bills, we draft the bills, we run the computer systems. We draft anywhere from 2,000 to, in rare years, 3,000 bills for introduction. The number of those bills that actually become law every session, discounting the rulemaking bills, is probably somewhere between 200 and, in a really heavy session, 400. Now, we only draft bills for members of the legislature, but sometimes a constituent or a lobbyist will convince a member that they should put in a bill, and the member will send them down to see us. So we assign it to a lawyer. A lawyer will make a first draft of the bill, then we'll proof the bill, and we proof for two things. We proof, one, just for grammatical errors, but two, the law is pretty big. If you look behind me, you see a bookshelf. Well, it used to be, when I kept the code of law in here, a quarter of that bookshelf was the West Virginia code of law. So when you draft, there's oftentimes far more complexity, because one section can impact another section of the code. So you've got to be able to proof it also to see if there's any connection between the new bill you're drafting and what the statute presently was. Because my lawyers don't like using the magic word, which in bill drafting is notwithstanding, which means forget everything else in the code. We don't care what else is in the code. This is all that matters. And that's not a good way to draft. You really want to draft by identifying any other code section that affects what you're trying to do and amend that code section if it needs to be amended as well. If it's a very simple bill, say declaring blue and gold the state color, that's not going to take very long. And if I remember correctly, there's actually a statute that says the state colors of West Virginia are blue and gold. But more often than not, the members coming down with a conceptual idea. They know there's a problem that they want to fix. And it just depends with regards to the complexity of the problem that you're trying to fix as to the complexity of the process of trying to determine what the language is that you put on a sheet of paper that tries to address that problem by instructing an agency or by instructing citizens or corporations how they're supposed to act in order to fix the problem the state's identified.
West Virginia legislature.
Because while the legislature may be the smallest of the three branches of government, in a lot of ways it's the most important. It's what sets the law that the executive branch has to follow. It's what sets the law that the citizens and corporations have to follow. It's what sets the law that the judicial system has to interpret. And therefore, there's a real importance to getting that right. And the back office stuff, in a lot of ways, is just as important than what citizens see when they watch your show with regards to floor sessions. Because if that bill's not right, and sometimes they're not, sometimes there's technical errors in them, it can totally destroy what the purpose of that bill is. So you have to get the back office stuff correct. The details matter when it comes to legislation. The smallest detail, a comma in the wrong place, could make a difference in how the judicial system interprets a sentence that's in a bill.
Next week on the show, we focus in on education. On Monday, Christine Campbell, president of the West Virginia chapter of the American Federation of Teachers, and Dale Lee, executive director of the West Virginia Education Association, join us to discuss potential cuts to public education and the flexibility lawmakers are attempting to give local school systems. And next Friday, we'll be bringing you a special hour-long episode of The Legislature Today. Live from the Capitol Rotunda, we'll speak with legislative leaders as they prepare for the final hours of this legislative session. That's next Friday, April 7th, from 6 to 7 p.m. And yesterday was Marshall University Day at the Capitol, so we leave you this evening with a performance from the John Marshall Fife and Drum Corps. This has been The Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. We'll see you back here next week.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University. Online at wvu.edu. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.